Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
We have a cost of living crisis, falling food prices and ever more ambitious climate targets. And they're all contributing to a really challenging time for farmers. Well, this week, the new president of the Irish Farmers Association took office and he's vowed to address these issues head on. And he joins me now in the studio. Francie Gorman, you're very welcome. Thank
Morning,
you for being
Claire.
Here. Congratulations on your election. As I say, you took up the role this week. And it is a really challenging time for farmers. Those issues I've outlined there, like it's a once in a generation shift in how farmers do business, what's expected on of them. And you've also been asked really to, if you look at beef and dairy, like turn that farming model on its head. Do you agree? Is that a fair assessment of where you're at?
Yeah, it probably is, Claire, to be fair. And look... The one thing that farmers have always done down through the years, they've taken best advice, for whether it's from Chagas or their consultants, and the best farmers always took that advice and used it to the maximum. And the advice up to, you know, a small number of years ago was we had the abolition of milk quotas, drive on, and it's really only in the last probably 2-3 years that this really has come to the fore. And, you know, what I'd be saying is, and what we were saying in IFA is that we need to be given time to allow the measures that we've adopted on farm, and we've adopted a significant number of measures on farm, to give it time to show that it can deliver in water quality and emissions. I think on emissions, we produce our beef, our milk, in particular, and I suppose they're the two areas that are of biggest focus. We're among the most efficient producers, emission-wise, in the world, of beef and lamb.
And that's always contested, and you know that it is.
Yeah, it is. But it is a fact. We're up at the very limit in terms of dairy, and we're fourth or fifth in beef. And what I would be saying is we have the climate, we have the skill set among farmers, we have the land to be able to produce food. And we have a growing population, and I've no doubt that if the science is given a chance, that we will adopt the practices that are needed. And if there was a flaw for me in the in the last nitrates review mechanism that was announced in 2022, it was that we weren't given the time to allow those measures that have been adopted on farms, and there's plenty of them.
Okay, so just to explain to people, because we'll have non-farmers listening to this as well, the nitrate situation is that you're going to be asked to reduce the amount of chemical fertiliser and organic fertiliser that you're putting on your land now, and this is linked to water quality. Do you accept that you're going to have to do that? Because there was big pushback against that measure.
Yeah, and we actually have been doing that. So look, to explain it, if you're farming today, you can farm up to 220 kilos of organic nitrogen on your farm for 2024. 250 in a small number of places in the country. It's been reduced down from 250 to 220. We have to meet our emission targets, a reduction of 25% by 2030. And there's a number of ways that can be done. The crude mechanism is to reduce stock numbers. And that always seems to be the focus, where the focus should be in trying to reduce emissions. And if the science is given a chance, I believe it will deliver that. Fertiliser usage is down 30% in the last 2 years. And if you get a reduction in fertiliser usage, you'll have a reduction in emissions. The signpost farms were set up in 2021. They're already reporting, and methane reducing feed additives are going to be rolled out in them next year. And I believe that we'll hit that 25% target. And we have.
So are you saying to me that you do not believe that the stock of animals needs to reduce?
No, I don't. I think if science is given a chance.
That is the problem, because is it not the case that the boom time for beef and dairy has come to an end? It was propped up with state supports, with EU supports. Now everything has changed.
We've probably reached our peak. But task farmers to reduce, I think, when we can deliver our climate change targets by adopting measures and adopting new science that will come on board, I think it's the way to go. There's also a huge hit that farmers will take. If we're asked to reduce our stock numbers, there's going to be a huge reduction in income there. And for me, even the environmental supports that we get now, the basic payment we get, it's tied into delivering environmental ambition. There's very, very few sectors been asked to pay for environmental ambition out of the wages that are paid at the end of the week.
Yeah, you see,
but farmers
are. You're going to take a hit anyway because of the reforms around CAP, aren't you? So all of that investment that people who are doing high production, that's not going to count for anything because those payments are coming down for everybody, unless your land was inactive, in which case the payments are going
up. Payments come up.
So things are changing. So surely what your members need now is somebody at the helm is going to say, come on, lads, it's not going to be the way it was. We need to innovate. We need to change. You know, a young person taking over a farm tomorrow, what would your advice to them be?
My advice to them would be, and I'd always say it, there's no better life, no better lifestyle, no better way to make a living than to be out working on your farm every day. But you've got to be rewarded for doing it. And to be fair, you know, my job, I'm only in the position 3 days, is to represent the elected, the people, the members of the association, the people that voted in the election last December. There's a huge level of frustration among farmers out there about how they're being portrayed, maybe unfairly, in the media. And I mean, we've adopted a host of measures. And this is the point I'm making. We're not saying for 1 second that there isn't a problem around emissions. You look at the late acre scheme that was announced earlier on. The scheme itself is insufficient. It doesn't properly reward farmers for delivering an environmental ambition. But 46,000 farmers applied to join that scheme, mainly because of income pressure at farm level. And if you want to stay viable, you have to be in all those schemes. The minister's allowing in another 4,000. There's actually another 9,000 on top of that looking to get into it. So if we want to deliver...
Sorry to cut across your fancy, but I do understand that it's very difficult if the government and the EU has been saying for years, drive on, increase your stock numbers, and now you're being asked to put that into reverse. But you can't hold out against the tide. You know, you can say we're going to continue to drive on, because the fact is you're not going to get paid to continue to drive on. If you leave aside the environmental concerns, which are huge, as a business model, this is not going to be sustainable for you because the payments aren't going to be there.
The payments are not going to be there, but you can already see that there is greater returns coming from the marketplace. There's a demand for our food. It's exported to 170 countries around the world. And to be clear, farmers have not lost sight of the need for us to produce our food in the most sustainable way possible. We export 90% of what we produce, give or take. If we weren't doing that, if we weren't producing top quality food in a sustainable fashion, would we get to sell that into those countries?
Yeah, but you're flying it halfway around the world. Do you know what I mean? You're either concerned about climate change or you're not. And you're somebody who's out in the land. You can see climate change.
And to be fair, where that food has been bought at the moment, those countries are not able to feed themselves in a lot of cases. They wouldn't be buying it if they could produce it at home. So what's the answer?
Well, they're being told to eat beef, you know.
Well, beef, you know, everybody should have choice themselves in what they want to eat. My mum was a nurse and she always maintained everything in moderation if you want a healthy lifestyle. And certainly on beef, dairy products, you know, there's evidence out there to suggest that they're part of a healthy diet and a healthy lifestyle.
Okay, and I could have somebody else on in the next 5 minutes who will tell me that for the environment, we should all be cutting way back on the amount of meat that we eat. You say on your own website that you're going to push back against environmental constraints. What do you mean?
I mean, in particular, about how it's going to impact on farm income. And this is the point I've been making all along. Farmers can't be expected to pay for environmental delivery out of their own pockets. The food is needed. We're a food-producing country. We don't have a heavy industry like they have in the Ruhr Valley in Germany, or we don't have an aircraft industry like we have in France. So we're always going to have a greater share of our emissions coming from agriculture. That's what we do. We do it better than most countries in the world. We have the climate, we have the skill set. And I believe that farmers should be encouraged to produce as much food as possible, but to do it in the most sustainable way possible. And as I said earlier, we've always taken on best advice. The best farmers take on the best advice. And what we need is to be encouraged, incentivized to be able to do that in the most sustainable way possible. And at the moment, the government's ambition around climate change is not matched by how they're prepared to support farmers to do it.
So you're not saying that you won't change. But
absolutely not.
But you need the incentive to change, the financial incentive to change.
Every policy that changes, whether it's in education or health or agriculture or transport, it's driven by incentives from government. And there's not a sector in this country that's not supported in some shape or form. It can be the medical card scheme, the free legal aid scheme. There's incentives to industry to come in and set up in the country. Farmers have to be incentivized as well. That's how government drive policy. That's what, you know, that's what makes us the country that we are, where everybody is looked after. That we generally have good policy around how we have a country that has policy that takes care of everybody.
Can I ask you about Eamon Ryan? Because you've called farmers the unsung heroes of climate action and biodiversity. He called farmers the climate heroes of the future. Look, you're on the same page, really, if you think about it.
Look, I'm not denying that for a second. Farmers are more, you know, take more cognizance of the environment than most people. We need water to feed our stock. We've looked after our countryside. Most people take pride in their farms. They look after their hedgerows. I think a figure that was given to me lately, 10,000 kilometres of hedgerows were grown by this current generation, more than any generation in the previous 200 years. Mm-hmm. And I've no doubt that, you know, we can sit down with Eamon Ryan, Minister McConnellogue, the Taoiseach. We had Minister McConnellogue, Minister Hackett, Minister Hayden in at our AGM the other day, and they got a fair snapshot of the frustration that farmers have at the moment in how they're being asked to deliver in a way that they can't afford. And we had the Taoiseach in that night, and he was, we were quite clear from his address as well, that he takes on board the frustrations we have. Eamon Ryan has been in at her AGM previously. We'll sit down with them all, and what we will do, Claire, and I'll be clear in this, we'll come forward with ideas and policies. And if we go into the government and we can get agreement on them, we will go out and we'll explain those policies to our members. We just don't, we're not an organisation that has ever wanted to be kicking the door down from the outside. We want to be inside, putting forward our ideas. And I think, particularly since the advent of COVID-19, when we stopped face-to-face meetings, we don't have that level of engagement now that we had before that.
Sounds like you had half the cabinet at your AGM the other day. I mean, you said at that AGM that you feel abandoned by the government, but they were all there listening to you.
Yeah, but if you look at issues around TAMS, nitrates, delayed payments, VAT rebates, there's huge issues there that are affecting farmers in a big way, and we're struggling to get delivery on them. So, look, while it's great to have the Taoiseach and the Ministers for Agriculture at our AGM, you'd always like that. It shows that there's an ambition for them to engage with us. There needs to be a greater level of engagement further down through the civil service.
Everyone needs to eat, right? And there should be a positive connection between farmers and the public. I'm sure you'd agree. But due in part because of the environmental stance of farmers up to now and the pushback against these measures that we all agree we need to take, farmers are blamed for climate change and they're accused of not being willing to change how they operate. Now, you as leader of the IFA are in a position to change how that relationship is working and to change that perception of farmers. Is that part of one of the things that you want to address?
100%. And I'll be clear in this. I don't believe that farmers, in the eyes of the biggest end of people in this country, are seen like that. There's a very, very small vocal minority that get a greater share of airtime that continually knock farmers, will not accept that we've implemented measures on our farms to deliver an environmental ambition, are not prepared to accept that we need time to be able to deliver on that. And I honestly believe, and we believe in the association, that if we get time, that those measures will deliver. And that's why the cut from 250 to 220 in the recent review of the nitrates derogation frustrated so many farmers, because there's a fair chance that we will continue to see water quality is kind of stabilising. We have the fourth best groundwater quality in Europe. That's a figure that's never really put out there. And if we were given the time for those measures, I believe they'll deliver on emissions, they'll deliver on water quality, but in 3 years' time, people will probably say, oh, it was the reduction in stocking rates delivered it. And as I said earlier on, we need to focus...
You're saying
on,
you won't contemplate reduction of
what
stock.
What I'm saying, Claire, is we need to focus on the level of emissions rather than the amount of stock we have in the country.
And how does that work?
Well, if we adopt practices which we have done, like low emission slurry spreading, multi-species swards, we use protected
clover,
urea.
clover.
We use protected urea. We adopt better breeding practices. There's ways of reducing your emissions without reducing production. And if science is given the chance, and we have the Young Scientist Exhibition down the road today, there's projects in it around agriculture and how we're going to reduce our emissions. If we give science the chance, I believe it will deliver.
I don't know how long we can wait, because we have been told time and time again there's no way out of this only to reduce the number of stock, number of animals. And a cow cull scheme has been up for consideration. You know that by the department. It would remove 200,000 dairy cows. Like, you should be getting ahead of that, surely.
Yeah, and look, once again, those figures are flagged, they're put out there, but there's no... There's no proper figures put in place as to how we would compensate farmers.
You're saying, wait, we've got to just wait for science to catch up. That's not going to work either, Francie.
Well, I mean, you're assuming that farming is the biggest cause of climate change.
It's the biggest cause of emissions when it comes to water quality as well.
In this country, it is, because we're an agriculture, we're a food producing country, as I said earlier.
But that's why the burden rests with you. Do you understand?
It does, but I believe, and we believe ourselves, that the way to address it is through science. The absolute necessity to reduce stock numbers is a very, very crude way of doing that. And remember, it's not just about environmental. There's the economic side of it as well. There's the social side of it. If you take farming out of parts of rural Ireland, we have two indigenous industries in this country. It's farming and tourism.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wants to take farming out of rural Ireland. It's about changing what you do and changing what you produce.
Well, if you take, for argument's sake, if you take suckler beef production out of the counties from Kerry up to Donegal and the western seaboard, what do you replace that production
with? I don't think anyone's talking about taking it out. It's about changing what you do. So you might be farming as many and you replace that with something that is sustainable. And it's getting ahead of that instead of pushing back. And that's where I started with this.
Like what?
You've got to realise where the tide is going. I don't know. I'm not an expert on farming. Yeah, but what I'm saying to you is the science is telling you we can't keep going. The policy was wrong. It was coming from the EU. It was coming from the government. Drive on. That's what you said at the start. Now everyone's being asked to pull back. Why not accept that and find a way to farm and make money that doesn't do as much harm to the environment.
And we have accepted it, Claire. And it comes back to the point that I made about farming in the more remote areas. If you take, for example, suckler beef or sheep production out of those areas, everybody says we need to adapt and we need to change and we need to take on different measures. And you ask them, well, what will we do if we take those, if we reduce stock numbers, reduce suckler cow numbers in that part of the country? What will come in and replace it? Mm-hmm. Nobody can tell you. Mm-hmm. They'll tell you about sequestering carbon in the hills, and we'll give you an environmental scheme that's not fit for purpose, that will not replace the economic activity in that area. And not alone will you lose your, if you lose your economic activity in that area, you lose your schools, you lose your churches, because people won't be living in it. You lose your merchants, your sporting clubs. So if you want to keep people living in the more remote parts of the country, you've got to keep agricultural activity there. And in the other parts of the country where you can farm in maybe a more intensive manner, you adopt those practices that I've been talking about earlier on, and you try and reduce emissions. And our emissions are down. We already have met in terms of fertiliser usage. We've met our target in terms of 2030 already there. So, like, I believe, and I keep making this point.
Can I ask you about, sorry, Francis, of course, we're going to ask you about something else, about succession. Is that a big worry for people now, that their children are just not willing or interested in taking over?
Unquestionably. And it's not down to the discussion we had earlier on. It's down to the fact that unless you're farming probably, you know, in a really, really substantial farm today, the ability to make a living full time on it, or even make a living part time that would reward you for your work, is becoming more and more challenged. And there's opportunities out there now. If you go to college and get your degree, we're at full employment.
You don't have to do it.
And look, while I love farming, I'm proud to be a farmer. My family are farming for generations in County Laois. I have one little lad. I'd love to see him coming home to farm. But look, he can be a bus driver, a doctor, whatever he wants to be. But I would not encourage him. I would always encourage him to come back to the farm if he wanted. I would never not encourage him. Mm-hmm. And but it is a huge issue. And I think it goes back to the point that we were making earlier on. If you don't have, you know, the easiest way, and this, you know, mightn't sound like you're supporting the next generation coming on, But the easiest way to support the next generation in farming is to support the generation that's there today. And that's the point that I made earlier on. You don't develop a farm over one generation. It's done over three, four, five generations. And the most successful farms that you see today, when you drive by them, you know that their father, their grandfather, their great-grandfather was there. And the value and the work that's put there, in that, that's in that farm today, has been put there by generations of work. And people have been completely committed to having a viable farm.
Right. Well, Francie, you have a tough job ahead of you as president of the IFA. That's Francie Gorman. Thanks for coming in, Francie. We'll take a break.
Thanks, Claire.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.